Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
17-year-old Kiana Galvin had just celebrated earning her GED and had plans to attend art school in Atlanta. But on May 6, 2016, she left her family's home in South Elgin, Illinois, to visit someone in her neighborhood, and then vanished without a trace. As hours turned into days, critical evidence began pointing investigators toward a dark possibility, that something terrible had happened just blocks from her home. Though police initially believed Kiana to be a runaway, phone records and witness statements pointed to something far more sinister. But despite blood evidence, suspicious renovations, and conflicting statements from a person of interest, no arrests have been made in Kiana's case. And 9 years after her disappearance, there is still no trace of the bright, friendly teenager. Did someone she trusted betray her that spring afternoon? What really happened to Kiana Galvin? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Kiana Galvin. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode and is here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. All right, so this case is making me furious.
Okay.
So that's why I'm going to say right off the bat, you know, that this is more than likely a no-body homicide case. But unlike many other potential no-body homicide cases, this one has at least some known blood evidence, which is also key in prosecuting a case like this. However, as I just mentioned in the intro, the prosecution hasn't happened. Kiana's case has gotten a fair amount of local attention and has been featured on the Vanished podcast and Dateline's Missing in America. But despite this, there doesn't seem to have been much movement on the law enforcement side in years. It absolutely seems as though there is more information and evidence that can be uncovered in this case. So, I don't know, hopefully more attention can maybe help that along in some way. Like, just, I feel like pressure just needs to be put on the South Elgin police, because as we'll obviously be getting into, there's not really a lack of evidence in this case, and there's definitely more out there.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing what you've got for me.
But before we dive into Kiana's story, we'd like to thank our newest Patreon supporters, Claire M., Rob M., and Kedra. Thank you so much.
Thank you all so much.
If you want to join them, you can hop on over to Patreon and join us at any level, starting at just $2 a month for ad-free episodes and a free copy of the ebook that I wrote. So with that out of the way, let's talk about Kiana Galvin. Kiana Galvin was born on July 16, 1998, in Illinois to Fiona Galvin and Everick York. She has one younger sister, Maya. In 2016, the 17-year-old Kiana lived with her mother and sister in South Elgin, Illinois. She was also close with her father and stepmother, who lived about an hour away in Rockland, Illinois. She had even lived with them for a year and attended high school there before returning to South Elgin and finishing up her high school career by getting her GED. Kiana was bright and artistic, with big plans for her future. She was looking forward to pursuing art and design studies and was looking into a school in Atlanta, Georgia, where she was planning on studying interior design. In the meantime, she had gotten a job working full-time as a housekeeper at a local rehabilitation center for the elderly. However, there was some turbulence in Kiana's life as well. She had recently finished a term of juvenile probation after a dispute with her mother, and she had recently broken up with her boyfriend. On top of that, on May 5th, 2016, the day before she disappeared, Kiana was fired from her job due to attendance issues.
The attendance issues, like, you know, she's a 17-year-old kid.
Yeah, it just sounds like she wasn't quite ready for, like, a full-time job.
Sure. But you said that she was on juvenile probation for something with her mom?
Yeah, and I never saw any details of that. And, of course, because it's juvenile, like, none of that's public.
Yeah, it'll all be sealed, right.
So it doesn't specify, like, what the issues were. But, you know, it sounds like in 2013, 2014, in that area, Kiana was definitely going through, like, a rebellious stage. And I think she and her mom were having some issues. And just reading between the lines, what I've inferred is that that's kind of what led her moving in with her father for a year.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that.
Yeah. Okay. And then, so that's kind of the thing that I got. Like, I think she moved there for a year. Everything kind of, like, settled down, chilled out. She, you know, maybe matured a little bit and then came back to South Elgin and lived with her mom and her sister again. But, you know, by that time, because she had switched high schools and everything, she just decided to go and get her GED instead of finishing up back at her original high school. So, yeah. So, like I said, I mean, there's definitely some turmoil, you know, but it seems as though by 2016, that part had at least settled down.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, Kiana was, you know, upset, of course, about losing her job, but her family says that she was not in despair or, like, acting unusually distraught about it. In fact, that evening of May 5th, Kiana joined her mother on a trip to the grocery store to buy steaks to grill for Mother's Day, which was that Sunday, May 8th. The morning of Friday, May 6th, 2016, began ordinarily for the Galvin family. Kiana's mother, Fiona, chatted with her daughter before leaving for work at around 7 a.m. She ran the kitchen at the local elementary school. So everything seemed normal. Kiana even appeared to be in a cheerful mood despite having gotten fired the day before. After her mother went to work, Kiana stayed at home with Maya, who was 15 at the time. Around 12:30 p.m., Kiana told her younger sister that she was going to walk to Jim Hansen Park, a small neighborhood park only about 3 blocks away, to meet up with some friends, and that she'd be back in a few hours. So with that, she left her house on foot, carrying only her phone. She did not take her purse, wallet, house keys, or even a phone charger. It just seemed like she was going to hang out with friends for a bit and come back. Like, no big deal. Her sister didn't really give it a second thought. I would never, like, leave my house, I think, without my wallet. But she was only going a couple blocks away. And so I think that if she really needed something, like, she figured she could just run back by the house and get it.
Yeah. I mean, we're also adults.
Yeah, true.
You know, and, like, I mean, our
teenagers forget their wallets, like, every time they leave the house.
Yeah, sometimes when they drive.
Yeah.
So, you know, different mindsets, different generation, too,
exactly.
I think. Because, you know, when we were that age, we always had our wallets with us, but we also didn't have a phone.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was just a different time, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, short trip to the park to see friends.
Exactly. And again, like, 3 blocks away. So I get why she didn't feel like she needed to bring a bunch of stuff with her.
Right.
So yeah. So, but the big point is that everything indicates that that was her plan, right? Like, short trip, hang out for a few hours, come back. Like, she didn't need a phone charger or any of that stuff.
Yeah.
However, hours passed that afternoon and Kiana never returned home as promised. By evening, her family grew concerned. They attempted to call and text her, but got no response. Kiana's cell phone, which had been in regular use that morning, went dark right after 1 p.m. and was no longer connecting to the network. Now, they, of course, didn't know that at the time. They just knew that, you know, calls were going straight to voicemail and she wasn't responding to texts. Initially, Fiona Galvin hesitated to immediately call police because she thought that maybe Kiana had gone to a friend's house or just, you know, needed a cooling off period, especially given, like, their kind of past and things like that, right? But when Mother's Day arrived with still no word from Kiana, Fiona's worry turned to dread. That day, Sunday, May 8th, Fiona reported her daughter missing to the South Elgin Police Department.
And should I venture a guess as to the police response?
I mean, yeah, I think you can guess exactly what the police response was.
Nothing. She'll come back on her own.
Yeah. But by that point, Kiana had been gone over 48 hours with absolutely no contact. And the people who knew her knew that that was a bad sign because they did not think that there was any world in which she would deliberately stay away or miss Mother's Day without any communication. Like, again, she and her mom had had problems in the past, but they were totally fine then. They had gone shopping. They were grilling steaks.
Right.
Like,
they had made plans for Mother's Day.
Like, everything was cool. They had plans. That evening, South Elgin police officers arrived at Fiona's house and took down the report. They entered Kiana into state and national missing persons databases and called around to local hospitals and mental health centers, checking to see if an unidentified girl matching Kiana had turned up. In the early morning hours of May 9th, police even tried to trace Kiana's cell phone, but it was already turned off. Almost immediately, as you suspected, police appeared to lean toward a runaway scenario. Now, I will say that they at least had some sort of basis for this because, you know, when they're taking the initial report and everything, dispatchers informed the responding officers that Kiana had been listed as a runaway in both 2013 and 2014, and that officers had previously been called to the Galvin home for arguments between Kiana and her mom.
Right, which obviously resulted in the juvenile probation period.
Exactly, right. Exactly.
But once again, I mean, you don't run away without taking at the very least a phone charger. Like,
right.
If it was planned that you were going to be away for a while.
Yeah.
Like, what teenager would leave on a expected long trip like that without a phone charger?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was absurd, you know? And especially, like, yes, okay, Kiana and her mom had had problems, and I don't know this for a fact. It was never said explicitly in any of the articles I read about this, but I have to imagine that those times in 2013 and 2014 that she went missing or ran away or whatever, that was probably preceded by fights with her mom and, like,
and that's
other turmoil and things like that.
Right,
like,
and that didn't happen here.
No.
Mom wasn't even home.
Exactly. Neighbors recall police canvassing the area only on the Tuesday after she vanished, 4 days after she was last seen, and 2 days after she was reported missing. Kiana's next-door neighbor, Colleen Seal, recalled the officer asking if she knew that her neighbor, Kiana, had been missing since Friday, and Colleen was floored. Another neighbor, William Ballard, also remembered that initial contact and the casual way that the police framed the situation. He told reporters, quote, "At first they said, oh, she's just a runaway," end quote. But Ballard pushed back and told police that this didn't line up with his impression of Kiana, saying that she wasn't the type of girl who would just vanish like that. And what was the officer's response? "She's into drugs."
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's so frustrating on many levels, and I know you're going to get into the connotation of somebody being involved with drugs and the cops just basically letting them be a throwaway person. But, like, referring to it to her as just a runaway.
Yeah.
Like, if you find a runaway early, you might prevent all kinds of terrible things from happening to them.
Exactly.
Like, all kinds of other crime. Like,
yeah, and runaway
sex trafficking
or
prostitution or
Serious drugs or, you know, anything,
yes,
right? Like, a lot, anything could happen. She's still a minor.
Yeah, you don't just throw somebody away just because, and I don't think that she was a runaway, obviously,
yeah.
But, like, even if she were, you don't just, like, not do your job.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, they did their job technically, right?
They did their, like, diligence,
due diligence. Yeah, sure. I'm sure that if you look at the general orders for the South Elgin Police, you know, it says, okay, you get a missing persons report, you enter them into the databases, you take a report, you know, and they did those steps,
yeah,
right?
They checked boxes, right?
Yeah, but there wasn't a sense of urgency at all,
or any type of real investigation. It seems like,
right, not at the beginning, for sure. But yeah, so Ballard, you know, along with Kiana's friends and family, acknowledged that she may have experimented with drugs, but, like, again, just kept insisting that she was not the type to take off on a bender or whatever the police seemed to have been implying. Because of the preconceived notions that investigators had in their heads, they also didn't contact the media to get attention on Kiana's case. Instead, Fiona reached out to local media and spread the word of her daughter's disappearance. 2 days after filing the report, with no sign of a public alert from law enforcement, Fiona Galvin took it upon herself to contact reporters and plead for coverage. So media coverage in those first few days was almost entirely driven by the family. Thanks to Fiona's efforts, on May 11th, the Daily Herald ran a story announcing that Kiana was missing, featuring quotes from Fiona and even comments from Sergeant Flanningham, who was, you know, like the lead investigator on her case. But this was only after Fiona herself pushed to get the story in the press. Adding to the family's frustration, no Amber Alert was ever issued for Kiana. However, this actually can't really be blamed on the investigating officers. In Illinois, the Amber Alert criteria at the time were quite strict. The system was typically reserved for children under 16 and/or for individuals with clear evidence of abduction or imminent danger. 17-year-old Kiana didn't meet those criteria, and since police had no proof in those first days that she'd been taken against her will, the Amber Alert system wasn't activated. So yes, like that, and we've run into that before, right?
Yeah.
With just the overly strict requirements for an Amber Alert hindering these cases.
Yeah, which, and I know we've talked about this before, but it's incredibly frustrating. I mean, I understand the thought process behind it is that if the general public is oversaturated with alerts for missing persons or missing children of any age, that they won't pay, they'll stop paying attention to them.
Right.
But you have these categories of missing people that if the public were aware of them, that maybe they would be able to, or maybe they'd be able to help, or maybe they have had interactions with these people or they've seen them or whatever. And it's just, it's incredibly frustrating that like, there's got to be such strict criteria on it. Call it something else then.
That's the thing. That's what people are doing. And like, I don't know how this is better, right? So because there are so many cases that need an Amber Alert type announcement,
right?
You have all these new alerts. So like in Virginia, for instance, we now have the Cody Alert, and that's named after Cody Bigsby, who we've covered on the show before. But we have that now. I actually saw one not too long ago, but that's for kids who don't fit the Amber Alert criteria. And so, but it's very similar. And now there's also a Kiana Alert. Like, okay. Kiana got her own alert because of this that was created by the Missing Persons Awareness Network. And it's not just in Illinois. So, for instance, in 2017, it was used in the case of a missing woman in Westbury, New York. So it's like, okay, if we've got to keep Amber Alert criteria so strict, and that just makes us have to create all these other alerts, like, what's the point of any of it?
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. It's stupid. I get it. I get the foundation of the Amber Alert system, because obviously that's, it, I mean, just call it a critical missing persons alert.
Like, just, like,
that's all you need.
Yeah. Like something bad happened, guys. Like, keep an eye out.
Keep an eye out for this.
As days turned into a week, the tone of the investigation slowly began to shift. As she remained out of contact, it began to become more likely that Kiana hadn't left by choice. By the second week, they enlisted the U.S. Marshals Service and several neighboring police departments to assist in the search. Investigators began pulling Kiana's cell phone records and social media data, looking for any digital clues about her whereabouts. And again, the fact that this wasn't done on day one is extremely frustrating. But at least they did it, I guess.
I mean, it's only because they started getting pressure from the media.
Yeah. And, you know, and her family, because her family is like, hi, she's still not here. Like, we told you. But despite this, police still weren't calling this an abduction. On May 18th, nearly 2 weeks after Kiana vanished, Sergeant Randy Endine told NBC reporters, quote, "We're looking at this as a missing person, but can't say either way whether it was something foul play or a runaway," end quote.
He didn't need to add that.
Yeah.
You just leave it as we're looking at this as a missing person.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
You don't need to add a caveat to it to make it seem as though it's less important.
Yeah. Just say, yeah, she's still not home. still 17.
Right.
Still a problem.
And I get them not coming out and saying this was an abduction because there's no, at this point,
at that point they had
there's
no
evidence
of
it. Yeah. But again, just call it, we're still treating this as a missing persons case.
Yeah.
You don't need to say, well, but it could be, she could be a runaway.
Right. Now, hindsight is, of course, 2020, but there's a lot that could have and should have been done in those early days that wasn't. For instance, police did not halt the routine trash pickup in the neighborhood during that first week. Remember, Kiana was last known to be going just a few blocks from her own home, and Fiona couldn't shake the thought that crucial evidence might have been hauled off to a landfill in those first days. And as it turns out, she had good reason to think that. So remember how Kiana told her sister she was going to meet some friends at the park?
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't exactly true. Once police were able to get a hold of her phone records, they found out that she had actually been heading to a house on Revere Road, which was near the park. Shortly after leaving, at 12:35 p.m., Kiana sent a text message to an man who, from what I gathered, was staying in the basement of a home on Revere Road. He definitely wasn't the owner. Reports have said that the house was owned by family members.
Okay.
That has not been confirmed. I just know he for sure wasn't the owner. So whether he was just like a tenant renting it out or a family member staying in there, he was in the basement of this house, right? So she texted this man at 12:35 saying that she was on her way to his house. He replied, all right, this 12:35 text was the last text that Kiana sent. And by 1:10, her phone was no longer connecting to the network, meaning it had been turned off or the battery had been removed. So that seems like a big deal. Kiana wasn't heading to the park at all. She was heading to somebody's house.
And when did the police find this information out?
So it looks like they found this out on May 11th, so about a week after her disappearance.
I mean, I'm assuming they went and interviewed this subject.
Yeah, so it says that they did just chat with him on the 11th. They didn't, like, bring him down to the station, I don't think. I think they just went to the house and, like, knocked on the door, you know?
Okay.
So, yeah, they're like, hey, you know, do you know Kiana Galvin? Have you seen her? Blah, blah, blah. Now, I don't know if he told them this or they just found this out from the texts, but it was revealed that the purpose of her going over was so that she could buy marijuana from him.
Okay.
When asked about the visit, he claimed that Kiana did, yes, come over that day, but she never came inside his home and that she left around 12:45.
Okay, totally possible.
Right, right. So, like, that part is plausible. Like, if she had gone over to buy weed from him, texted him at 12:35, said, hey, I'm on my way, she gets there, transaction, takes off.
Right.
Right? Like, sure, yeah. makes sense. The problem is, he told police that she was texting someone else to meet up with her as she was leaving.
Which they already know is a lie.
Exactly. Even worse, the man's neighbor contradicted the story, saying that they saw Kiana go into the house, though they did later say it could have been the day before. But either way, I think that he said that she had never been in the house. So even if it was a day before, like, he was still lying about the texting. Like, it's not adding up.
Right. So now my next question is, at that point, why didn't they go revisit this gentleman or invite him to the station?
Good question, because they definitely didn't.
Or call him out on his lie right there? Right there,
yeah.
when he lied and they knew it.
I don't know. But something terrible was about to be discovered near the house on Revere Street. Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body truly is? I recently took the True Age test from True Diagnostic and discovered my biological age, and the results completely changed the way I think about my health. Biological age is a powerful indicator of how fast you're aging internally, which directly predicts your risk for serious diseases. Because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. The good news is nearly 90% 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in. I recently took my TRH test, and I was worried about my brain function, but it was actually my cardiovascular that I realized I needed to work on. Luckily, my biological age was about the same as my calendar age. So while I do have a little bit to work on, it definitely put my mind at ease. The test itself was super easy. I just had to do a little pinprick. You send off a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and about 2 to 3 weeks later, you get your detailed report. It's fast and hassle-free. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. Ever noticed how many unnecessary chemicals are in your cleaning products? When I started looking into what I was actually using around my home, I realized that my laundry detergent might just be the worst offender. So many popular brands are packed with harsh chemicals that can irritate your skin, mess up your hormones, and cause allergic reactions. So instead of continuing to use those dye-filled pods, I switched to Earth Breeze. Their detergent actually comes in sheets that are free from harsh chemicals like optical brighteners, dyes, parabens, phosphates, and preservatives. It also doesn't come in those plastic jugs. It's just a lightweight, pre-measured sheet that dissolves in the wash and gets the job done. And yes, your clothes still come out clean, fresh, and soft. I feel so much better knowing that I'm not exposing myself and my family to those unnecessary toxins. So if you're looking for a powerful clean without the harsh chemicals, try Earth Breeze. It's easy to switch, and if you're not completely satisfied, they have an amazing money-back guarantee. And right now, you can try Earth Breeze for up to 40% off plus 4 free gifts at earthbreeze.com/ATTWG. That's earthbreeze.com/ATTWG for 40% off plus 4 free gifts. If you're at all like me, then you got your first credit card when you were in college, and maybe it didn't go great. That's why with my kids, I'm trying to get them to figure out money at an earlier age, so they can hopefully avoid some of that pain later down the road. That's why with our youngest, we're using Acorns Early. It's the smart debit card and money app that grows kids' money skills as they grow up. They can set their own savings goals, it has an in-app chores tracker, and their very own customizable debit card gives them an extra sense of independence. Ready to teach your kids the smart way to earn, save, and spend? Get your first month on us when you head to acornsearly.com/ATTWG or download the Acorns Early app. That's 1 month free when you sign up at acornsearly.com/ATTWG. Acorns Early Card is issued by Community Federal Savings Bank, member FDIC, pursuant to license by MasterCard International. Free trial for new subscribers only. Subscription fee starting from $5 per month unless canceled. Terms apply at acorns.com/early terms. Perimenopause and menopause can start earlier than most people think and can impact nearly every part of life. The good news? You don't have to just deal with it. That's where Effecty comes in. Effecty offers modern personalized hormone therapy, including bioidentical estradiol and progesterone to help bring your body back into balance. Whether you're dealing with hot flashes, mood swings, or brain fog, Effecty's treatments are designed to ease symptoms and help you feel like you again. I'm in my 40s and perimenopause has hit me hard and really does just make you feel not like yourself. I've been working with Effecty for a while, and you can get treatments that are specifically tailored to whatever it is that you're dealing with. I love it because it's so convenient. Everything happens online, from the medical intake to prescription and delivery. So whether you live in a big city or a rural town, Effecty brings expert menopause care right to your door with no waiting rooms, no pharmacy lines. So if you're struggling with sleep, mood swings, low libido, or just don't feel like yourself, it might be time to look at your hormones, and Effecty can help. Right now, you can get $50 off at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's EFFECTY.com and use ATTWG for $50 off. Start your journey to feeling better. On May 12th, the neighbor noticed spots of blood on the lid of his garbage can. He alerted police and he was like, listen, this was not here before. And police came and collected the sample. They basically took the lid of the garbage can with them and collected a sample, sent it in for testing. Months later, the lab confirmed what Fiona had dreaded. The blood was Kiana's. While that single garbage can lid was saved, we have no idea what other evidence might have been unknowingly carried off by the garbage truck in the meantime. By the time police realized the significance of Revere Road, the regular trash pickup had come and gone. Now, despite the man being caught in a lie about Kiana's visit on May 6th and the blood found on his neighbor's trash can lid, months went by before a thorough search of the property was conducted.
Why months?
I don't know, but it was not until November 8th, 2016, that police executed a formal search warrant at the Revere Road home.
It does not take that long to get a search warrant.
It sure doesn't. Yeah, that's a full 6 months after Kiana vanished. And by that time, of course, any perpetrator would have had ample time to hide or destroy evidence. Now, with that said, I was going to try to give them the benefit of the doubt and say, well, maybe the judge did deny the search warrant pending the results of the DNA testing. But the DNA tests apparently came back on September 21st.
Right.
So what were you doing for that month and a half? You had her DNA. You had him in a lie. Meanwhile, it's been months with no word from her. What are you doing?
Yeah, what were they doing?
I don't know.
Again, I go back to the simplest form of the initial contact with him and him clearly lying to them and them not following up on that. And then they find out shortly after that that there's blood on it on top of his trash can.
Yeah. And this isn't this guy. And we'll get into more about him later. But this guy isn't exactly a pillar of the community either. Like, he had a record. I mean, nothing crazy, but he had seen the inside of a jail cell before, you know? There was no reason for them to be like, oh, well, it couldn't be this guy. Like, there's no way he would have done anything. So I don't know what it was. It was crazy, though. Oh, and even worse. So I don't know if they learned this like before the search or during the search or what, but I think it was around this time that investigators learned that the basement bathroom of that house had been completely remodeled sometime in June, about a month after Kiana had gone missing.
Do they know who did the remodeling?
I don't know. I mean, if they do, it hasn't been publicized.
Jesus.
Police documents later revealed that during that November search, they were searching for signs of aggravated battery or murder, looking for any of Kiana's clothing, fingerprints, or other forensic evidence in the home.
6 months after she's gone missing?
Yeah.
And this guy remodeled the bathroom? Like, it's gone, guys. You missed your window.
Well, okay. Yes. I mean, if anything gruesome had happened in that bathroom, the remodel could have absolutely wiped away traces of it. But here's what I will say. From what I've been able to find, only one search warrant was executed at this home. To me, even with the renovation, there could absolutely still be DNA evidence in that basement. There's probably a close to 0% chance that they removed a vanity, for instance, to see what was behind it. And I'm sure they didn't rip up like any new flooring to see if anything had soaked into the subfloor, for instance.
Yeah.
I would also say that it's probably unlikely that they used Luminol or Blue Star technology to see if there were traces of blood that had been cleaned up in the basement either. So, you know, the remodel also makes me believe that the man in the basement must have been related to the owners, right? Because it's not common for a random tenant to remodel a bathroom.
Right.
Nor is it super common for a landlord to remodel a bathroom in a tenant's area in the middle of a lease, unless there's like a flood or, you know, some outside reason to do so. That's typically something that's done between tenants.
Right.
So to me, that's something of, you know, hey, I'm staying at my aunt's house or like whatever it was, and I'm going to take it upon myself to remodel this bathroom. And there could be very innocent reasons for that. Maybe it's a thank you for letting him stay there.
Timing.
But yeah, the timing's real bad.
Yeah.
The other thing that's worth mentioning is that after looking at property records, I found that the people who owned the home in 2016 when Kiana went missing had bought it in 2005. They tried to sell it a few times beginning in 2019, but there were no takers. They were finally able to sell it in an off-market sale in 2024. Perhaps the new owners would be more amenable to searches? I mean, I of course have no idea, but it's something to consider.
If the police want to actually, you know, pursue this case.
Well, exactly. But, you know, we've definitely seen other cases where police have wanted to search a property, whether it's inside or outside, haven't gotten permission from the owners, for whatever reason, weren't able to obtain a warrant to do so. Then the property gets sold. The new owners say, yeah, sure, take a look, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, we get some clues, right? So I'm just saying, like, hey, that could be an option here. And that's a fairly recent development. So all of these issues, the delayed neighborhood search, the initial runaway assumptions, the absence of an Amber Alert, the lack of early media outreach, and the slow pace of following up on leads, all coalesced into a deeply frustrating experience for Kiana's family. Fiona Galvin has never accused the police of not caring, and she acknowledges that investigators did put in considerable work. In fact, South Elgin police logged hundreds of overtime hours on Kiana's case and worked regularly with state and federal agencies in the months that followed. But the tone that they set in those first few days was really hard to shake, especially when it kind of continued and this stuff just wasn't getting done in a timely manner. So this left Kiana's family with a lot of what ifs. What if police had treated Kiana's case as high risk from the very start? What if they had canvassed the neighborhood on May 8th or 9th instead of May 10th? What if an alert had blared across Illinois that first night, warning everyone to look for Kiana? As Fiona herself said later, even if the police didn't initially realize the danger, quote, time's the enemy when locating a child, end quote. And in Kiana's case, too much time may have been lost in those immediate, all-important days. By the time 2016 came to a close, the investigation remained active, but no arrests were made. By December, law enforcement acknowledged that Kiana's case was likely not a voluntary disappearance. 7 months. They ramped up public outreach, such as billboards, and coordinated with multiple agencies to generate new leads. Kiana's family, meanwhile, endured the holidays with no answers and continued to plead for anyone with information to come forward. After the November 2016 search, there wasn't a lot of movement in Kiana's case. But it turns out there was a lot going on with the man on Revere Road. You are told your health starts in your gut, but if you're a woman, it all starts with your hormones. When your hormones are off, everything is off, including digestive issues, mood, mental clarity, energy levels, weight management, and so much more. Hormone Harmony is a game changer for women struggling with hormonal imbalances that leave them exhausted, both physically and mentally. It only contains science-based ingredients that bring back comfort, energy, clarity, confidence, and a sense of balance. Happy Mammoth, the company behind this phenomenal formula, has helped over 2.4 million women get their lives back and feel like themselves again after years or even decades of hormonal imbalances. And the reviews are unbelievable. Over 50,000 women are raving about better energy, deeper sleep, feeling more balanced and calm, reduced bloating, and easier weight management alongside a healthy lifestyle. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends, and they'll deliver them discreetly right to your doorstep. Even better, you can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with promo code ATTWG. We've been advertising Mood for a while. They've been really good to us. And after trying some of their gummies, it is wild how different each one feels. Those sleepy time gummies will knock you out in about 15 minutes flat. No hangovers, no grogginess. What makes these different is how they've paired THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not going to find gummies like this in a dispensary or anywhere for that matter. They've got immune support, menopause relief, PMS, mental clarity, sexual arousal, and all of them use federally legal cannabis, and it's all grown on small family-owned American farms, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. And best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com and remember, use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. So who is this guy? Authorities have never publicly named this individual because, as of yet, he has not been formally charged in connection with Kiana's case. Nonetheless, police have described him as a person of interest. After all, he is the last known person to have seen Kiana alive, and the evidence gathered, the neighbor's sighting of Kiana, the blood nearby, and the phone records all center around his residence. This man's account of the day raises a lot of red flags. And his story that he gave is directly contradicted by objective evidence. Furthermore, a neighbor's eyewitness report says that, you know, Kiana did go inside the house. So combined with the blood that was literally found next door, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence against this guy. But despite this, he has never been arrested in connection to Kiana's case. However, he hasn't managed to stay out of trouble. In 2018, the man on Revere Road, who now, because what I'm getting into is complete public record, so I'm comfortable saying is John C. Hawkins, pleaded guilty to slashing his girlfriend's throat in a 2017 domestic incident at the apartment they shared. Before we get into this, I just want to point out that last sentence, in the apartment they shared. Meaning that within about a year or less of Kiana's disappearance, Hawkins moved out of the Revere Road home. In April 2018, 23-year-old John C. Hawkins agreed to a sentence of 15 years imprisonment in the Illinois Department of Corrections in exchange for a guilty plea to the offense of armed violence. 16th Circuit Judge James C. Halleck accepted the plea. Kane County Assistant State's Attorney Greg Sam stated in court that at about 2 a.m. on April 9, 2017, the victim went into the bathroom of the apartment she shared with Hawkins in the 900 block of Bellevue Avenue. Hawkins, carrying a steak knife with a blade at least 3 inches in length, followed the victim into the bathroom. The two began to argue, and then Hawkins grabbed the victim by the neck and slashed her throat with the knife, creating a deep wound that was within 1/4 inch of the victim's carotid artery. The victim fell to the floor, Hawkins kicked her, and then fled the apartment through a window. Hawkins was on probation for a drug offense at the time of the attack. According to Illinois law, Hawkins must serve at least 85% of his sentence. He received credit for 368 days served in the Kane County Jail, where he had been held since his arrest, and that means that he'll likely be released around 2030. Kane County State's Attorney Joe McMahon said, quote, "This was a vicious, cowardly, and nearly deadly domestic attack. Mr. Hawkins is a violent, repeat offender who belongs in prison," end quote.
I mean, yeah, the history's there. The similarity.
11 months later.
The possible similarities are glaring.
I mean,
right?
It even happened in a bathroom. In a bathroom.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Like a bathroom. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
He brought the steak knife into the bathroom. And then they started fighting. I mean, I'm sure that the fight was before that, but he planned. Like, he didn't go in and just slash her throat.
They weren't fighting at the dinner table where he already had the steak knife in his hand.
He took the knife into the bathroom. They continued to fight. And then he slashed her throat. Like, this was
And then kicked her while she was down.
Yeah. This was thought out. This was planned. And like I said, the similarities of what could have happened to Kiana, that's way too close.
I can't imagine what her family must have felt when they heard about this. Like, my head would have exploded. And as soon as I read about it, I immediately thought about Bethany Decker, the woman who went missing near us, whose case we've also covered on this show. Her boyfriend at the time, Ronald Roldan, was eventually arrested and tried for her murder over a decade after her disappearance, and only after he moved to North Carolina and shot his new girlfriend in the face. Like Hawkins' girlfriend, she also fortunately survived, but in both of these cases, I'm left wondering if these second women could have been spared the physical and emotional injuries that they received if police had been more proactive in the initial cases. Because here's the thing, not to get too off subject here, but in the Bethany Decker case, and I said this in our episode about it, the evidence that they presented when they finally took him to trial, it was all available at the time of her disappearance.
Yeah.
They just didn't act on it.
Right.
And I have a feeling same thing's true here. I told you this case makes me angry. Like, I'm getting heated. Kiana's disappearance hit her family and community hard. Her mother, Fiona Galvin, became an outspoken advocate to keep Kiana's case in the public eye. Within weeks, she had set up a Facebook page titled Justice for Kiana to spread awareness and gather tips. It eventually gained thousands of followers dedicated to finding answers and is still regularly updated. The family also organized fundraisers and started a reward fund to encourage anyone with information to come forward. They quietly celebrated Kiana's 18th birthday in July 2016 with a cake and candles, not losing hope that she might still come home. Every holiday and milestone that passed was painful, but they remained determined to get justice for Kiana. Oh, dude, I almost forgot about this. I didn't put it in the episode because it's just like it's completely unverified. So everybody listening, please take that with a grain of salt. But I did read something that said that Hawkins' sister, when he got arrested, was trying to get him bailed out. So she called Fiona and said, hey, if you help bail my brother out of jail, he'll tell you what happened to Kiana.
What?
Yeah. And again, that's completely unverified. But Jesus Christ, like if that's true.
I mean, that can't be true because Fiona 1,000% would have gone to the police and said that. And then they, well.
But what if she did?
What if she did and they didn't do anything?
Exactly.
You're right.
If she did?
You're right.
I don't know. So anyway, Over the years, the South Elgin community has held vigils and rallies to remember Kiana and remind the public that her case is still unsolved. One significant gathering took place in August 2020, marking over 4 years since she went missing. At this rally outside the South Elgin police station, Fiona Galvin announced to supporters that she had learned Kiana's case was no longer considered just a missing persons case, but had officially been classified as a homicide investigation since late 2016. So, like, this is crazy. So, basically, after the blood evidence came back, the DNA came back, they reclassified it as a homicide case, but, like, didn't tell her family.
And also didn't do anything.
Yeah. With a large prayer circle and Justice for Kiana signs on display, Fiona urged law enforcement to move forward, saying, quote, my whole mission in this vigil is to keep focus on this case and to pressure the police to get more evidence to charge the person who's the primary suspect, end quote. Throughout all of this, Kiana's family has kept her memory alive. They have participated in missing persons awareness events and have never stopped looking for answers. Kiana's father, Everett York, said in an interview, quote, getting no information, it drives you absolutely crazy, end quote. Both of her parents hold out hope that even if Kiana herself cannot be brought home safely, the truth about her fate can be uncovered and those responsible held accountable. In recent years, there's been renewed attention on cold cases in the region, and Kiana's family is hopeful that advances in forensic technology or a courageous witness might finally break the silence surrounding what happened. But honestly, just given the limited amount of information that we have, I cannot understand how this case just fizzled out in 2016. They identified the man who was likely the last person to see Kiana. They caught him in a lie about seeing her. They found blood evidence. The basement bathroom was remodeled. I can understand why they may not have wanted to arrest him right then, but certainly that should have been enough to execute further search warrants on the house, as well as warrants for Hawkins' phone and social media accounts. Because to my knowledge, they never got that information.
It doesn't even sound like they did a second interview with him.
I mean, I think they did. Well, I do believe they did. So I do think in November after the search, they did bring him down to the station for a formal interview. But I mean, nothing happened. So again, not to get too sidetracked on a separate case, but another local case that we're covering, Mom to Coughlay. It took several trips back to her house with different teams of investigators in order for them to gather the evidence needed to charge her husband, Naresh Bhatt, with murder. And that's not including all the electronic search warrants that they've obtained in that case. Multiple search warrants. I don't have the number in front of me right now, but I want to say it was close to a dozen between the electronic search warrants and the physical search warrants of her home, his car, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. They put in work.
They did. And they brought, again, different teams. First search warrant, just the regular investigators. Then they brought like the forensic people in, you know, the Blue Star people. Like they brought all of these different people in to gather different types of evidence. And that's what needs to be done in these cases. Because, yeah, I'm sure that when they went and searched in November, Kiana's body wasn't lying in the basement. I'm sure like he didn't just
leave her there.
Right? Or like, you know, just a giant blood stain in the middle of the floor. Like, of course he didn't. But it doesn't seem as though they did any more thorough searches.
There's enough evidence there. I mean, I wouldn't say necessarily for an arrest, but there's certainly a lot of evidence there to get
more search warrants
and to really drill down on this guy, especially now that he's in jail.
Exactly. And he's in jail until 2030. Like, you don't need to worry about having enough for an arrest warrant right now.
Right.
Like, who gives a shit? He's in jail. Like,
but you've already got enough for a search warrant.
Yes. Just get more search warrants. Talk to the new owners of the house.
Yeah.
See what you can do. See what you can find. I guarantee you there is more evidence out there waiting to be found. And again, going back to this girlfriend, his second potential victim, right? Like, she was definitely a victim. We don't know if she was his first or second. But I've also seen online that she could have also known Kiana. Apparently, you know, when all this was kind of initially happening, people were doing a lot of Facebook snooping and saw that they were like mutual friends or they had pictures together or something. So it seems as though Hawkins, his girlfriend, and Kiana, all three may have known each other. So there's a chance that this woman may have information that maybe she didn't want to give before, but
maybe now.
Maybe now she does. And I don't know if she's been interviewed about Kiana's case.
Yeah.
There's more out there. That's the thing. I mean, we've covered so many cases over the years where it's hard to see where investigators could go next. Right? Because there are some that are just so baffling. There are so few clues.
Right.
So many leads have been exhausted that it's like, this is so mysterious. I don't know what the next steps could even be.
Right.
This is but not one of those here, cases.
Yes, there's a clear path forward.
A very clear path forward. And it's a path that was very clear in 2016. We're in 2025. The 9-year anniversary of this crime just passed. There's absolutely no reason that I can see. And again, who am I? I don't have all of the information. But based on the publicly available information, I cannot see, again, why this fizzled out 9 years ago. Somebody out there knows what happened to Kiana. Maybe more than one person. But until more pressure is put on the South Elgin police, it doesn't seem as though anything is going to be done in this case. Kiana Galvin's family will not give up fighting for justice. They hold on to the cherished memories of the bubbly, artistic 17-year-old who loved tie-dye cake and dreamed of a bright future. And like every family of a missing person, they deserve closure. The community of South Elgin stands with the Galvin family, united in the resolve that Kiana will not be forgotten, and that whoever is responsible for her disappearance will one day be brought to justice. Kiana Anna Galvin has been missing from South Elgin, Illinois since May 6, 2016. She is a biracial African-American Caucasian female with brown hair and hazel eyes. Kiana has a tattoo of a heart, a pulse line, and a cross on her left wrist, and a tattoo of three words in script running up her forearm. At the time of her disappearance, Kiana was approximately 5'6" and 145 pounds. She was last seen wearing a black tank top, black yoga pants with studs on the outside, size 9 zebra print Nike flip-flops, a silver stud in her nose, a gold and pink navel ring, and brown sunglasses. Kiana was 17 when she went missing. She would be 27 today. Anyone with information on Kiana Galvin's disappearance is asked to call the South Elgin Police Department's Special Victims Unit at 773-674-9490. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.